A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 26, 1995, in the series The Dream, entitled A Dream Embodied. The scripture readings are 1 Peter 2, verses 21 through 25, and Luke 21, verses 26 through 38. The texts for the sermon are 1 Peter 2, verse 23, and Luke 23, verse 34. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
125 years ago, there were a group, a little band of Dutch immigrants who founded a congregation for worship and ministry in this village. And we have entered into their dream. Wouldn't it be interesting this morning if we could have some of them with us? If we could talk to them about what it was that motivated them? What were their hopes and their expectations? What were their dreams? It would be fun to know what was in their hearts as they gathered together for the first time and they actually organized here a Christian congregation. Well, I can't go back over 125 years and rehearse that history for you this morning, but I have lived through the last quarter century of that history, and I can tell you that whatever dreams there were in the hearts of those who founded this congregation 125 years ago, 25 years ago, there was born a new dream. Rooted in this fine congregation that over a century had faithfully served God, a traditional Reformed church congregation with open mind and warm heart, in 1971, there was born a new dream. It's when I came back the second time to serve as pastor here. And as we began together, we began to dream anew. There was a vision that captivated our imagination. It was a vision of a different kind of congregation. It was a vision of an ecumenical congregation that would celebrate diversity, the blending of traditions, thus enhancing and enriching the whole. It was a vision of a congregation that would be an oasis of grace, so that all people, whatever their sort or condition, however bruised or battered they might be, however broken their estate, that they might find here the warm embrace, the unconditional acceptance and affirmation of the people of God, that we would be here, that place of grace, that would be for the healing of persons. And as we began in those heady days in the early 70s, we dreamed this dream, a dream all out of proportion with anything that we had been, all out of proportion with any resources that we had, a grand dream, a wonderful dream. And there were those, of course, who said, well, it is an impossible dream. An impossible dream it was. But a few of us had gone to California to the Institute of Successful Church Leadership. This congregation was praying for renewal, for some new, fresh wind of the Spirit to blow through it and to create newness here. And on the final communion of that institute, as we were in the chapel in the sky at the Tower of Hope, what is now the Crystal Cathedral, we heard Robert Schuller tell the story, the marvelous, moving story of the man from La Mancha, the man from La Mancha who dreamed an impossible dream and who transformed humankind because of the dream that was in his heart, the dream, impossible though it seemed, that came to reality. And we came home. And we said, yes, our dream is impossible. And we'll make it our impossible dream.
unrightable wrong. To love pure and chaste from afar. To try when your arms are too weary. To reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star. No matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable star.
My eyes were wet with tears as I heard Bob Schuller tell the story of the dreamer who looked at a person and called them what God would have them be when he met the slut, the kitchen servant, Eldonza, and called her his lady, what? Dulcinea. And she said, no, I'm not Dulcinea, I'm Eldonza. And he said, no, you're Dulcinea, my lady. And Schuller, with all of his dramatic effect, told the story of how calling the kitchen maid by a name of nobility transformed her inwardly, so that when the dreamer was dying, thinking the dream had died, she came to him and she said, don't you remember, don't you remember? And he said, no, I don't remember. She said, I was Eldonza, but you transformed me into Dulcinea. And I remember taking the bread and the cup in that chapel in the sky and saying, dear God, that's what the church is all about. To transform people, people who have given up on themselves, who are despairing, who have no hope, who are broken and bruised and outsiders and excluded and alienated, and saying to them, the grace of God embraces you and the love of God will transform you. And we came back and we said, we'll dream the impossible dream. And as I reflect on that, how appropriate it is for the story of Jesus. The story of Jesus who had a dream, the dream, that dangerous dream that we're trying to retrieve in this Lenten season, 1995, the dream that he declared in his home synagogue when he said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to preach good tidings, to bring release to the captives and sight to the blind and freedom to all who are oppressed. Jesus declared his dream. And then he lived out his dream, a dream that he lived out because of the image of God that he had in his heart, that image of God, that sense of who God was that he had wrestled through and come to conviction about in the temptation in the wilderness. As he came in the power of the Spirit, he declared his dream and he told a story of God in the guise of the old father who received the prodigal home and bid the elder son to come in. Jesus was a dreamer, and he had a dream, and he declared his dream. And in his action, in his concrete style of life, and in his teaching, he embodied the dream. Dreams shape the world. Dreams, too bold, create fear. And fear can generate anger And anger can issue in violence and tragedy. Dreamers die. But the dream doesn't die, because God keeps the dream alive. God raises up another to dream the dream, because the dream is the mirror of the heart of God. The dream that Jesus declared and embodied was a reflection of the deepest nature of the everlasting God, who is a God of grace, full of mercy, overflowing in compassion. Jesus had a dream. It was a dream of a different kind of world. It was a dream of a world in which no one would be excluded, but all would be included. It was a dream of a world where every human person, no matter what their condition, would be accorded basic human dignity, where every human person, no matter what their social or economic class, would be assured of the embrace of the love of God. It was a dream that Jesus dreamed, a dream that he taught, a dream that he lived out. But it was a dangerous dream, and they conspired against him, and they arrested him, and they tried him, and condemned him, and crucified him. And as they were crucifying him, and he was hanging suspended between heaven and earth, and they were mocking him and scorning him and reviling him, he prayed, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Can you take it in? Is it not incredible, amazing? Are we not dumbstruck before that demonstration of grace? And in that prayer, he equaled the portrait he had painted with a story of the loving Father receiving the Son, with a love reflecting the love of God, which is the only power in the world that can change a human being. In that prayer, the dream was embodied supremely. "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." Defying every human instinct, going against every instinct for survival. As Peter says, "Reviled, he reviled not again." Suffering, he did not threaten, but trusted in the one who judges justly, in the God whom he had served, the God whose dream had shaped his life, the God whose dream had been the content of his teaching and the shape of his human existence. He had taught his disciples, and those that gathered round, "Love your enemies, and thus you will be children of your Father in heaven, imitators of God. Love your enemies. Be like God." In response to a question from Peter about how often he had to forgive, he said, not seven times, but 70 times seven, which meant, of course, not 490 times. But what he was saying is that forgiveness is not an occasional act. It is the permanent set of the heart of the person who is permeated by the love of God. That dream Jesus embodied. And while we might have expected less, on reflection we can see that he really could do no other. His life being formed as it was by that sense of the love of God, the grace of God, the compassion of God, he could do no other, for he knew what he had learned from God, that it is only in love that transformation occurs. And so, being reviled, he reviled not, and suffering, he did not threaten. In that moment, the dream came true. In that moment, Jesus was set free. Free to die. For he had lived the dream to its ultimate expression. Father, forgive them. For they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. Dear God, they're not bad people. They're not evil people. In most cases, they are sincere people. But they are blind. They are ignorant. They have blinders on through the conventional wisdom. They are shaped by a society that is not shaped by your love and your compassion. Dear God, forgive them, for they're not evil. They're blind. The appalling blindness. That was a statement not of arrogant superiority. That was a statement of a sad recognition of the reality of the human condition, which has been repeated over and over again throughout the course of history. Good people, sincere people in ignorance, afraid, becoming angry, striking out in violence, issuing in tragedy. It is the human story. And Jesus knew there was only one way to short-circuit that ongoing syndrome of anger and violence and alienation. It was only by loving and forgiving and offering grace. Because you see what he taught about God in the parable we noted last week. He was now living out in his own flesh. Father, forgive them. And Peter says, Jesus has given us an example that we might follow in his steps. Dreamers die, but dreams don't die. Because God keeps the dream alive in the hearts of those who take up the dream, an impossible dream, and who continue to dream it and to live it out and to embody it. In 1971, we were captivated by a dream, and we began to embody here a community of grace. We became a haven for those who had found themselves unaccepted and excluded, ruled out. We became a place of refuge and rest for the weary and the despairing. Those who didn't count, those who couldn't get in, those who couldn't make the register. We became a place where grace healed and made alive those who had given up on themselves. And God has realized that dream in our midst. A radical dream 25 years ago, dear friends. A radical dream 25 years ago. But it is 1995, and it is our 125th anniversary, and it is time for the dream to gain new dimensions. It is time for those of us who were beckoned in by the grace that heals to be turned inside out and to allow that grace now to be released, to unleash this ministry that has been created here, to unleash that grace of God to the community and to the world. It is time for us who have found the experience of grace so healing, so comforting, so full of compassion, to in turn roll up our sleeves and to get our hands dirty and to do what we must do today, 1995 and on into the year 2000 and century 21, to stand for the dream of Jesus. It may not be for us to pray, Father, forgive them, and it may be for us to pray, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing, but it is for us to have clear vision and to follow the way of Jesus, to retrieve that dangerous dream and to embody it here, to become once again the hands and the feet and the concrete community where the love of God is incarnated as Jesus was the incarnation of that dream in the heart of God that God will not allow to die. Not to play church, not simply to cozy in here and comfort one another and stroke one another, but finally now, having been healed, having heard grace, having been embraced by a compassionate God, and to know, then to go out from here, to break out from here. It is time, dear friends, for marching orders. Not perhaps to pray, Father, forgive them, but certainly to pray, Lord, make us an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, to bring love. Where there is despair, to bring joy. Where there is hopelessness, to bring hope. Having learned that it is in being graced that we become graceful. In being forgiven, that we are free to forgive. That if need be, in dying, that we are born again to eternal life. Will you dream with me?